Huey found a suitable campsite near a windmill several miles farther on. The place had once been a homestead. He napped in the shade of a chinaberry tree some settler had planted, then shed his clothes and took a leisurely bath in the mill's earthen tank. His stomach began to talk to him, and he decided it was time to fix supper. He walked out of the tank to where he'd left his clothes hanging on the bottom brace of the windmill. They were not there.
Are these what you're looking for?
Huey turned quickly, holding his breath. A tall, lanky man stood there, a round badge prominently displayed on his shirt. Huey's clothes lay at his feet.
I reckon you'd be Bill Jones?
Huey recognized Len Tanner's broad grin.
Where'd you come from?
From all directions. Us rangers are everywhere. Figured you'd show up at the wagon sooner or later. I trailed you from there. Better get your clothes on while I decide whether you're Huey Calloway or Bill Jones. I got a warrant for Bill Jones.
Well, I'm back to being Huey Calloway.
I knew it had to be you as soon as I seen your brother Walter with that cattle herd. Everything fit. Naturally, we didn't find anybody who'd admit to ever knowing Bill Jones. Slocum doesn't know your real name, and I didn't see any reason to educate him.
Thanks, Len.
Huey began putting on his clothes, starting with his hat.
I heard that you got yourself shot up by that cattle thief. What's his name?
Olin Trumbull. He just creased my ribs, maybe cracked one a little. It grabs me now and again when I move wrong. I made out like it was a lot worse because I wanted him to think he'd put me out of the way for a while.
What brought you to this part of the country?
Trumbull's a native of these parts. I had myself a sign down here where I could watch his white trash kinfolks. I think I got a lead on him.
Well, I hope so. It's on account of him that I'm on his drive. He threatened to get me for testifying against him. Some people thought they saw him back on the Pecos, so it was a good idea for me to go away.
He was out there a while back, but he didn't stay long. Normally, I wouldn't figure him to risk his neck for revenge against you, but them kind of yahoos don't think like us normal people. They can hate awful hard.
Tanner grimaced.
Sid Slocum, for an instance. He's foaming at the mouth like a hydrophobic coyote. He wants Bill Jones sent to the pen for life. Or 150 years. Whichever takes the longest.
Huey tried to calculate how old he'd be in 150 years.
All on account of me pulling a little joke on him?
Well, some folks ain't got much sense of humor.
What do you reckon I better do?
Keep doing what you're doing now until he gives up the hunt. If I was you, I'd ride on ahead, take roundings on San Antone, and pick up the herd somewhere to the west, like over in the German settlements.
You're not going to arrest me?
I'm carrying a warrant for Bill Jones. I don't see anybody here by that name.
Huey started breaking camp.
I'm much obliged.
For nothing. Sid Slocum is a brass-plated son of a bitch. I just hope you don't find out that Bill Jones and Huey Calloway wear the same size britches.
Well, who's going to tell him? Paget and the others, they're honest men.
Huey reconsidered.
All but maybe Fat Gervin.
Huey was tying his blankets behind the candle of his saddle when he heard a horse approach.
Well, Ranger, I see you've apprehended the culprit.
Before he even turned, Huey knew Sid Slocum had caught up with him. Len turned too quickly and grabbed at his side.
Sure did, Mr. Slocum. Caught him fair and square.
He has a lot to pay for, leaving me to die. It will be my great pleasure to see him locked in the meanest cell of the Carnes County Jail.
Len pressed his hand against his ribs, which had not yet fully healed.
Now, I'm afraid it ain't going to be quite that way. You see, I recognized him. His real name ain't Jones at all. It's Atwater. His crimes take up a half a page in the Ranger's fugitive book. He's wanted out in San Angelo for killing a whiskey drummer just to get his sample case. They want him at Menardville for busting a teamster's skull with a single tree.
Slocum's jaw sagged.
He did all that?
Sure enough. He's a desperate man. Be thankful he didn't decide to kill you.
Slocum paled as he contemplated his narrow escape.
I'll have to deliver him to Ranger headquarters in San Antone. They'll decide who gets to hang him first.
Slocum looked as if he were about to be sick.
But I'll put your name on the list. You'll get the use of him if there's anything left. Would you like to help me put the handcuffs on him?
I am not an officer. You'd better do that yourself.
Len locked the cuffs.
You can tell the sheriff down there that Bill Jones has been took care of.
Slocum summoned up courage.
I should be entitled to strike him just once.
Well, it's contrary to regulations, but if it gives me any trouble, I'll do it in your name.
At least I shall have the pleasure of telling Jerome Paget and his motley crew that Bill Jones is getting what's coming to him.
I wouldn't. They might do you some injury.
You're probably right. I'll go around them.
Slocum took one more look at Huey.
I hope they hang you so high that even the buzzards cannot find you.
He'll get his due.
When Slocum was well gone, Len turned to Huey.
I'd better leave the cuffs on you for a while. Slocum knows my ribs are still touchy, so he might circle back around to be sure you ain't taking advantage of my weakness. He threatened to get me fired if I didn't stop what I was doing and hunt for you. His money gives him pull in high places.
He's got a lot worse coming to him than spending a night or two in the bottom of a cistern.
Bad as they need it, sometimes you can't punish his kind. You have to leave them to heaven. He'll get his comeuppance someday, some way.
Huey accepted it, though it wasn't good enough.
I'd better stay with you till Slocum is given up for sure.
I'd be obliged for your company all the way to San Antone, but you'd better know that I'm going there after Olin Trumbull. His mother-in-law tipped me that he's hanging around a low dive with a woman friend. The old lady wants me to shoot him so her daughter can marry a better man.
Are you planning to shoot him?
No. I'd like to wake up every morning for the next 20 years and know he was fixing to spend the whole day busting rocks in the state pen. A daughter can get herself a divorce.
Huey rode alongside the skinny ranger, imagining how it would be to wear the handcuffs for real. Though as a boy, he had sometimes fantasized about romance and adventure in an outlaw life, the cuffs were a sobering reality.
You're a natural-born liar, telling Slocum that big windy about me being called Atwater.
Wasn't much lie to it. It really was Bill Atwater. He does have half a page in my fugitive book. He got his light snuffed out a while back in Galveston.
Shot?
Nope. Choked to death on a fishbone. Like I said, sometimes you have to leave him to heaven.
Huey and Len Tanner arrived at the southern edge of San Antonio late in the afternoon.
I know you volunteered to go in with me, but are you still sure? I won't hold it against you if you decide to back out.
Huey had begun to rethink the situation, but he had given Len a promise. He would swallow hard and keep it, the way Pa would have.
Just tell me what you want me to do.
We'll stop here and wait till dark. We'll want the quail to flush before the gun is loaded.
Huey had no argument with that. A larger question nagged at him. Why in the hell had he given Len his word in the first place? He was no lawman. He wasn't even a top hand yet as a cowboy. He should be with Tarpley's herd, and he would be were it not for Sid Slocum. He wished he were back on the Pecos. He would even settle for East Texas.
I'd better tell you, I'm real consistent with the pistol. I miss every time.
I don't want you to carry one anyway. I'd sooner face a dozen Comanches than a well-meaning cowboy with a gun in his hand.
Len untied his blanket roll and spread it in the shade of a tree. Though he moved carefully, he stirred up fresh pain.
I've got my ribs bound up tighter than the bark on a tree. They can still hurt like hell.
You oughtn't to be riding.
You can't catch a fish if you don't keep your line in the water.
To Huey's amazement, Len soon dropped off to sleep. He wondered how the ranger could do that with the hurting in his side and the knowledge that he might soon confront a wanted man who had already wounded him once. Huey's stomach was in turmoil from just thinking about meeting up with Trumbull. Sleep was out of the question. He'd be lucky if he didn't toss up everything he'd eaten the last 2 days. He thought of a dozen excuses for spurring away from San Antonio like a turpentine dog. Pride made him stand hitched. He had walked away from fights, but he'd never run away. Running was for cowards. Huey was merely cautious. When darkness came, Len awakened.
An early bird catches a worm.
Len got up and rolled his blanket.
About supper time. I know where there's a pretty good chili joint that don't try to get rich in one day.
I don't think I could eat a thing.
I got a rule. Never get shot on an empty stomach if you can help it.
He saw that Huey took him seriously.
You ought to know I don't mean half of what I say. I just talk to keep the silence away.
Huey tried to make sense of that, but he couldn't.
Silence gives me the shivers. That's what it must be like when you're in your grave.
Len ate a hearty meal of tortillas, chili, and beans. Huey sipped half a cup of coffee that kept churning after it went down.
Maybe Trumbull's gone someplace else.
We'll find out directly. You ought to try some of this chili. It's hot enough to light a cigar without a match.
The thought of it brought the coffee halfway back up Huey's throat. Len stalled until his pocket watch told him it was nearly 10 o'clock.
If he's going to be there at all, he ought to be there by now. You still got time to back out.
Huey felt that he had committed himself too deeply to back out.
I'll go.
They tied their horses in front of a low stone building that had a sign reading El Gallo Rojo.
That means the Red Rooster. It's the kind of place where folks pick their teeth with a bowie knife.
And we're going in?
Me through the back door, you through the front. If we don't set off a shooting inside, might hit some innocent party. If there's any innocent parties there.
Well, I'm an innocent party. What if he decides to shoot me?
I'm betting he'll want to sneak out without ruckus. You can go to the bar and order a whiskey. You see Trumbull, don't act like you recognize him. The main thing is for him to recognize you. I figure he'll head to the back door. I'll be waiting there for him.
What if he runs over me and goes out the front?
50-50 chance is about the best we get most of the time.
Len started around the building but turned for another word of advice.
Don't drink that whiskey. You have to burn a hole in your belly. In joints like this, sometimes they sell it before the snakeheads have dissolved.
Thanks for worrying.
I ain't worried. It's what I do for a living. I don't like for life to get dull.
Around you, I doubt it ever does.
He watched Len turn the corner and disappear. He waited another minute or two, giving the ranger plenty of time to get in place. Putting down a strong urge to turn and run, Huey stepped through the open door. He wished his breath had been deeper, for the air inside was thick enough to slice. Whiskey, sweat, tobacco, and lamp smoke all mingled in a toxic mix that assaulted eyes, nose, and throat alike. He tried to blink away the sting. Through the haze, he saw that the cantina was crowded with men and women of many shades and hues. The aggregate noise of multiple conversations made it impossible to pick out any single voice. Huey worked his way to the bar.
Whiskey.
The dark-complexioned bartender waited, his brow furrowed expectantly. Huey realized he wanted to see the money first. He dug a coin from his pocket. The man examined it distrustfully, then filled a clouded glass from the bottle beneath the bar. Huey couldn't see the label, but it didn't matter. The bottle had probably been refilled many times with something other than what the label claimed. He pretended to taste the whiskey, but remembered Len's admonition and barely let it touch his lips. He turned away from the bar and saw Trumbull. His heart gave a jolt. He realized the cattle thief had seen him first, his eyes fixed on Huey in sharp surprise. Huey tried to pretend not to recognize him. He let his gaze sweep on past, but he continued to watch Trumbull from the corner of his eye. The fugitive sat at a small table with a slender Mexican woman whose dark eyes had been accentuated with heavy black makeup, her cheeks crimson with an overdose of rouge. Trumbull pushed to his feet. He started to move toward the front door. Huey forced himself to act casual, though his lungs felt about to explode with pent-up breath. He carried his drink toward a vacant small table and blocked Trumbull's path. Trumbull turned and started for the back door. He got there just in time to bump headlong into Len. The ranger held a pistol, but the collision was violent enough to knock it out of his hand. He grappled with Trumbull, then doubled over in pain. Trumbull had somehow struck the sore ribs. He was about to go out the door. Huey had no time to think. Huey had grabbed a chair out from under a patron and thrown it at Trumbull, knocking him off his feet. The patron fell to the floor in front of Huey, tripping him. All four were down in a tangle. Huey, the protesting patron, Len, and the cattle thief. Huey was the first to his feet. Trumbull struggled to his hands and knees at the same time trying to draw a pistol from his waistband. Huey stepped on his fingers and then slid the weapon across the floor. He righted the chair and set it down so that its legs straddled Trumbull. He seated himself in it and fought to regain his breath. Trumbull floundered, trying to free himself from the chair. He was pinned down by Huey's weight.
You all right, Len?
Len sat up and saw that Trumbull was helpless.
Oh, I think he re-busted my ribs. You sure you got a tight hold on him?
You son of a bitch! Get the hell off of me! I should have killed you the first time I saw you. Get the hell off!
Huey would not have been surprised if some of the bar patrons came to Trumbull's aid, but none did. Word quickly went around the room that Len was a ranger. If Trumbull had any friends here, their friendship was not strong enough to make them butt in. It was well known that trouble with one ranger meant trouble with all of them. Nobody had touched Len's pistol. He got to his feet and retrieved it, holding a hand against his side.
You sat idle long enough, Huey. Go out and get the handcuffs off my saddle, would you?
Len took Huey's place on the chair that held Trumbull down.
Hold still. Bouncing around like that is making my ribs hurt. Bartender, bring my prisoner a drink. Maybe that'll settle him down.
Tanner set the heel of his boot upon Trumbull's hand and pretended not to hear the howl of protest. Huey brought the handcuffs back inside. Len arose and lifted the chair from his prisoner. He pulled Trumbull's hands behind his back and locked the cuffs.
Take this gentleman down to the county jail till state headquarters decides what to do with him.
We don't know if he's got a horse.
He's got two legs. Long walk will help him to think about the wages of sin.
Outside, Trumbull stood with shoulders drooped as Len dropped a rope around his middle. Len swung up onto his horse.
Well, Huey, you won't have to worry about him anymore. You can go back to the Pecos River and not give him another thought.
I can't believe I let myself do what I just did. If I'd had time to think about it, I'd have lit out of that place like a jackrabbit.
You done fine, though. If you ever take a notion you want to be a peace officer, you let me know. Put in a good word with the Rangers.
Nobody can ever accuse me of being that foolish. I'll be happy if someday they can say I'm the best cowboy C.C. Tarpley has got and maybe get raised to a dollar a day.
Len and Huey spent the night in the county jail, though with cell doors open. Huey was so tired that the hard cot felt like a feather bed. After breakfast, he bade Len goodbye. He didn't stop to speak to Olin Trumbull, for everything worth saying to him had been said. He saddled his horse and headed south on the road toward Laredo, hoping to strike the trail of the Tarpley herd. He encountered a woman and two tow-headed youngsters traveling toward town in a farm wagon.
Ma'am, you seen anything of a cow herd passing this way?
The question roused the woman to immediate anger.
Oh, you're darn right I did. A bunch of them cows trampled my garden. What little they left behind, the cowboys mined trying to drive them out. I am on my way now to find the sheriff. I think I've got damages coming.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know who they belong to?
Huey thought quickly.
A man named Eli Jessup, out by Upton City.
Well, Mr. Jessup has got a surprise coming to him when my lawyer sends him the bill.
Yes, ma'am. I expect he'll be real surprised.
A herd of that size was not difficult to trail. Huey cut across their sign and turned westward. He found them at noon, some of the men eating at Sixto's wagon, the rest continuing to push the cattle at a slow pace that didn't tax the smaller calves. Paget noted Huey's arrival with a casual nod and hardly looked up from his coffee.
Well, maybe you'd quit us.
I couldn't do that. Ain't been paid yet.
Walter walked up carrying a plate of beans and some kind of meat. Huey saw the freshly cut carcass of a kid goat hanging from the wagon. Probably a stray, and fair game for whoever came along.
Are you sure you left Sid Slocum behind?
Did better than that. Left Olin Trumbull in the San Antone jailhouse. Let me tell you, going up against a case like Trumbull, ho ho ho.
He explained how he and Len had caught the cattle thief. Noting the eager reception his account received from Walter, Paget, and a couple of the Mexican cowboys, he saw no harm in embellishing his own part a bit. Len probably wouldn't mind. Anyway, he wasn't here.
Now you won't have to keep looking back over your shoulder. You got nothing to worry about.
Huey nodded, though he knew that was not entirely true. He still had to worry about Walter. His brother had not mentioned Eve in a while, but Huey sensed he still thought about her often. A faraway look would come into Walter's eyes, and not even a clap of thunder would bring him back before he was ready. Huey would try to distract him by talking about dreams of his own, dreams of being free as a pair of eagles, roaming the West wherever they pleased, visiting the Rocky Mountains, perhaps even wading barefoot in the California surf. The whole world was open to a man who carried no responsibilities except to himself, no baggage to tote that he couldn't wear or tie to his saddle.
I've been thinking, Walter. When we get these cattle delivered and draw our pay from CC, Let's quit and go see something. I hear they're starting up some big ranches out in Arizona. Been lots of Texas cattle gone up to Montana and Wyoming, too. I'll bet they're paying a lot better wages than CC ever would.
I thought you said money doesn't mean anything to you.
It ain't the money, it's the excitement. A man can get bogged down in one place and never know what all's out there that he's been missing. Like CC Tarpley, he doesn't know but what the whole world starts and ends along the Pecos River.
A man can also miss a lot by being always on the go. There's much to be said for taking root in one place, building something of your own, and raising a family, and watching them grow with the country. It's the kind of life Pa and Ma had. They seem to like it.
Pa never got out of East Texas except for the war. He was always one crop short at the bank, and he died a poor man.
Broke, yes, but he never was poor. Broke just means out of money. Poor is when you're down in your spirit. Pa was always happy right where he was, him and Ma.
But there ain't many women like Ma, and there's few men lucky enough to find one.
I believe I already did.
Huey ran out of argument for a while.
I wasn't Eve born fat and ugly.
The terrain west of San Antonio quickly became hilly and rough, the rock-strewn road occasionally a challenge for the wagon. Paget followed the old military route that would lead through Fredericksburg and Fort McCavitt, then on to San Angelo and the confluence of the Conchos. Gabe had fallen moody and quiet. It was as if he isolated himself from the other riders, immersed in his own meditations, much like Walter. Huey pulled up beside him, hoping to strike up a conversation. Gabe offered none.
What you studying on so hard?
Gabe was slow to answer, as if it took a minute to break through the invisible wall that surrounded him.
Walter's been telling me about a woman out in Upton City that he's taking a shine to. Got me to thinking about the one we saw working for the old man who sold us that horse Belcher. What was his name?
It was Hickley, maybe, or Hickson. Yeah, I believe it was Hickson.
I keep studying about her. Cook's daughter, he said she was. Name of Belinda.
You remember her name, but you can't remember his?
That's because she was a lot better looking than him. Going by the landmarks, I will be passing that place again.
Well, looks like it to me.
Reckon it'd be all the same to Mr. Paget if I was to stop off for a little visit.
I don't see how it could hurt, but he's bossing this drive. You'll have to ask him. What's so special about that girl?
While you was out on the Pecos, did you see any women of my complexion?
Well, no, I don't recall that I did.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe seemed to feel that no more justification was needed.
You and Walter both got women on the brain. Women tie you down. They keep you from doing all the things you want to do and going to the places you want to see.
It's different with you. You can go anywhere and be welcome. I can't. You've seen for yourself, there's places that won't even let me stay for a night. I've seen signs saying, "Darkies, don't let sundown catch you in this town."
As a matter of fact, I have too.
I'm out of work when this drive is over. That old man asked if any of us wanted a job. I'd like to see if he was just talking to you and Walter, or if he meant me too.
Well, he'll have you wrestling with them goats.
That's all right. Goats won't care what color I am.
Juanito rode close, bringing in a cow and a calf that had moved off to graze.
How about you, Juanito? You talking about leaving us too?
Juanito seemed surprised by the question.
Mr. Dodge, he is dead. Mr. Slocum, he got his own vaqueros. I stay with Mr. Paget.
Paget was careful not to let the herd get close to Hickson's field. The goat man rode out and looked the cattle over, then pulled up beside Huey and Gabe.
I'm glad they're yours and not mine. I can grab a hold of a goat and throw it down. Can't do that with a cow.
Well, they're not exactly ours. They belong to Mr. C.C. Tarpley. We're delivering them to him.
You're all hired hands? I'm still looking for help. Anybody interested?
Gabe tried to be casual, but his eagerness showed through.
I might be.
Hickson stared at him as if appraising a horse.
Huh. Are you a working hand or a smart hand? I've had some smart hands.
I'm a working fool.
I believe in paying a man what he's worth. How about 6 bits a day?
That was as much as Huey was making. And Gabe didn't know anything about goats. Sometimes life was not fair.
Is your cook really good?
Hickson rubbed his stomach. His belt was buckled at the last notch.
You can see for yourself. My daughter's pretty good hand in the kitchen, too.
Then I ain't a cowboy no more.
Paget skirted south of San Angelo as he had skirted past San Antonio to avoid angry confrontations over trampled gardens and broken fences. He followed Dove and Spring Creeks past a village called Knickerbocker and a town known as Sherwood before bearing a little to the north and striking the Middle Concho.
I hope it's rained enough to fill up some water holes. Otherwise, it's apt to be a dry drive from the head of the Middle Concho to the Pecos. Charlie Goodnight was one of the first to drive cattle this way. More than 20 years ago, he had all kinds of hail.
There was water enough when we came this way, me and Walter. Even a few windmills that's been put up since the last time you were out here.
Good. I was afraid I'd have to earn that extra commission I'm fixing to charge, CC.
What do you figure on doing after we get these cattle delivered? You gonna go to work for CC?
For that tight-twisted old hellion? No. I think I'll go on out to Pecos City and sign on with one of the big outfits. I'll take the Mexican hands with me. That way I can offer somebody a whole crew.
Juanito, too?
I may dodge a promise. I'll look after him till he's mature enough to look out for himself.
That eased one of Huey's concerns. He doubted that Tarpley would be hiring extra hands, and he feared Juanito might be left at loose ends.
You're good-hearted, Mr. Paget.
Ain't nothing good-hearted about it. It's just business. I'll be needing Juanito and these other boys as bad as they may need me.
How about Sixto?
There's times when cowboys are in surplus supply, but there ain't never too many good cooks. Damn right I'm taking them with me.
Huey had been seeing travelers along the trail, so he paid little attention to a horseman coming from the west until he was close enough to recognize.
Hey, look yonder, Walter. It's Snort Yarnell.
Snort stopped to talk to Paget at the point of the herd. Huey and Walter left the drags to Juanito and another hand and loped up to greet Snort. Gangly cowboy slouched in the saddle, his gold tooth gleaming in a foolish-looking grin that slanted across his homely face.
Howdy, Huey. Howdy, Walter.
Even before he was close enough to smell Snort's breath, Huey knew he'd been drinking.
Where you headed, Snort?
Snort pointed in a vague easterly direction.
San Angelo. Thought it was about time I had me a good old-fashioned drinking spree and did something I'll worry about from now till winter. I kind of dread it, though. Know how bad I'll feel when it's over.
Why don't you quit it?
Can't. Got too much invested in it already.
Snort reached inside his shirt and pulled out a half-empty bottle.
Drink anybody?
Not till the drive is over.
Snort tipped the bottle and stuck it back in his shirt.
It might be over sooner than you figured on. There's been hell to pay in Upton City.
What are you talking about?
It's C.C. Tarpley and Eli Jessup. Them old jugheads got into a big cuss fight. Might have led to a shooting if they'd been packing iron. And there's liable to be a shooting yet. I'd rather be someplace else for a while.
Ain't you working for Jessup?
Was. He fired me again. Figure by the time I spent my wages, he'll hire me back. If he's still alive.
Huey remembered Tarpley's insistence upon secrecy about these cattle.
Were they fighting about these cows?
Cows are part of it. Seems like there was a parcel of land the other side of the river that both of them wanted. Eli tried to buy it, but he was too chinchy to bid enough. So CC snuck in behind him and offered what the owner asked for. I gather he figured to stock the place with these cattle.
That means we may be riding into a fight.
You are if you keep going the direction you're pointed. You should cross some of Eli's land to get to CC's. Eli don't figure on letting you do it.
The land's not fenced. I don't know where the boundaries are.
You and Walter can show you how to go around. It's an extra long way, but it'd be the safest thing to do.
He touched his fingers to the brim of his hat.
Adios, fellas. I got friends working for both outfits. I ain't standing around to see them get hurt. Or me neither.
The cattle had not stopped moving. Paget touched the spurs to his horse to keep up with the leaders.
This ain't a fighting outfit. There ain't but one or two guns in the whole shebang. I reckon we better turn them. But which way?
Huey watched Snort leave and for a moment wished he were going too.
South. We may have already crossed Jessup's line. I see a windmill off yonder that I think is one of his.
He was fairly sure it was the mill where he and Walter shared coffee with Jessup their first night on the trip.
I remember a time when the Comanches came close to taking CC's hair. I almost wish they had. It ain't right them two drawing their men into a private squabble, getting them hurt, maybe killed. The cowboy wages ain't worth it.
Especially on what we're making.
But as long as you ride for Brand, You ought to be willing to fight for it.
Huey and Walter helped Paget turn the leaders southward. The cattle had been traveling west so long that they resisted. Huey explained the reason for the change to the rest of the hands. Fat took it like a death notice.
I ain't being paid enough for this. I'll send for my wages.
What about Cece's daughter?
Ain't no woman in the world worth it.
What do we do now?
It's what we've been doing. Keep driving these cattle. Except now we go south.
Huey loped off to catch Sixto and turn the wagon. Sixto pulled on the wagon reins.
Oh. There is trouble?
Well, it could be. We're changing direction to try and go around it.
The cook reached into a canvas bag beneath the wagon seat and brought out the biggest pistol Huey had ever seen. It was of an old cap and ball design and probably as old as Sixto.
Is that cannon made in Mexico?
See? But he can kill anywhere. Many times he has done so.
Better put it back in the bag. We're trying to go around a fight.
Maybe the fight is already come.
Sixto pointed westward. Huey saw 8 or 10 horsemen approaching. His mouth went dry.
We can't afford to start anything. There ain't enough of us to finish it.
Sixto handed him the pistol. Huey tried to give it back to him.
I couldn't hit anything, no way.
Sixto would not take the weapon.
Hey, damn better you give this to Paget. I think he will need it.
Huey loped back to join Paget and Walter. They had already seen the riders.
Looks like your friend Yarnell didn't come soon enough.
Huey gave him the pistol.
Sixto thought you ought to have this, just in case.
Paget's eyes widened as he examined it.
This thing could kill an elephant.
He checked to be certain it was loaded.
I hope I don't need to use this.
He shoved it into his right boot. Walter squinted, watching the oncoming horsemen.
That's CC and the boys, but I don't know whether to breathe easier or not.
Tarpley spurred out into the lead, slowing the last 50 yards to prevent frightening the cattle. He stood in his stirrups as if that would make up for his lack of size.
Where the hell do y'all think you're going?
Tarpley pointed westward.
That's the way!
Paget waited for Tarpley to come close enough that he didn't have to shout.
Howdy, CC.
Tarpley turned angry eyes on Huey.
You've worked me long enough to know this ain't the shortest way to my ranch.
Huey tried to keep his composure as Grady Welch and others of the 2C's crew gathered around him. They were all armed.
We figured it was the safest. We just found out that Eli Jessup intends to stop us from crossing his country.
I don't give a goddamn in hell what Eli Jessup intends. We ain't walking these cows 2 or 3 extra days just to suit him. Turn them.
You're the same black-headed old fool I used to know, CC. You're liable to get these cattle scattered, and some good men hurt.
You've done your job, Jerome. I can do without your services from here on. I'll meet you in town and pay you what I owe you after we get these cows settled where they belong.
My job was to get these cattle bought for you and delivered to your ranch. We ain't there yet. Till we get there and I get paid, I'm the boss of this drive.
Huey had been in lightning and thunderstorms when he could feel electricity crackling around him. He felt it now as the two men glared at each other. He looked at Walter, but found no answers in his brother's worried countenance. A distant movement caught his attention. He wiped a sleeve across his face and blinked away sweat that had rolled into his eyes.
You all better come to a decision pretty quick. We got company coming.
He saw at least a dozen horsemen riding in a cluster. He knew they must belong to Jessup, for Tarpley had most of his crew here. Tarpley looked at the men he'd brought.
You boys check your guns. Make sure they're loaded.
Now you are fixing to get somebody killed. I thought when a man got older, he's supposed to get smarter. You ain't learned a damn thing since the last time I saw you.
Tarpley gave no sign that he heard.
Get this herd moving. Don't stop for nothing.
The cattle had bunched up during the attempted turn southward and had not yet begun to string out again. Jessup and his men came on in a long trot, circling around them. Jessup drew rein with his horse and Tarpley's almost touching heads. His heavy mustache twitched like an angry black squirrel.
You're on my land, CC. Turn back or we'll run them over you.
Tarpley's jaw jutted like a desert mountain rim rock.
This is a public road.
The ruts are public, but the ground on either side of them ain't.
These cows can't damage your land any. It's too sorry to hurt.
If one of your cows travels a step farther west, I'll shoot her. And then I may decide to shoot you.
Tarpley leaned toward Jessup, his eyes flashing defiance.
You won't get the chance. You'll be dead before you can pull the trigger a second time.
Both men dropped their hands to the butts of their pistols. Huey felt a prickling up and down his spine. Looking anxiously at the J-Bar Cowboys, he suspected they felt the same way. Jessup's foreman, Mitch, was tense, his right hand frozen halfway between the reins and his pistol. Huey sensed that the men on both sides wanted more than anything to turn around and ride away. They were held in check by the crackling animosity between the two older men. Paget drew Sixto's pistol from his boot and pushed his horse between the two men. He pointed the muzzle first at Jessup, then at Tarpley.
There ain't nobody shooting anybody unless I do it myself. You two heathens, get your hands up! Away from them guns!
This ain't none of your damn affair!
Both of you, drop them pistols to the ground!
Neither man moved. Paget quickly lifted Tarpley's pistol from its holster, then Jessup's. He tossed them away.
You've both been spoiling for a fight, but you always wanted somebody else to do it for you. Get down off of them horses.
He poked the pistol toward Tarpley. The skinny rancher dismounted stiffly, his face flushed in indignation. Paget turned to Jessup.
Now you, Eli.
Jessup defied him for a moment, but he couldn't hold out in the face of that formidable weapon.
Paget, you're as crazy as a bedbug.
Crazy enough to shoot one of you, maybe both. Now, damn you, fight.
They did not.
Fight, I said!
The slug flung up dust between their feet. It started the cattle moving away. Jessup struck the first blow. It glanced off Tarpley's chin and made his head jerk back. Tarpley tore into Jessup. Though Jessup was a considerably heavier man, Tarpley's anger gave him strength. His fist sent Jessup staggering. Mitch made a move as if to interfere.
Best leave him be. War would be a lot less bloody if they made the generals fight it themselves.
For two men past their youthful prime, the two ranchers managed to inflict considerable damage on each other, alternately grappling, then stepping apart and swinging their fists. They gradually slowed, gasping for breath, wiping sweat and blood from their faces onto torn sleeves. Jessup was the first to go to his knees and stay there. Tarpley swayed over him, clenching blood-smeared fists, but barely able to raise his weary arms. His wiriness had won out over Jessup's bulk. Paget's anger eased a little. He shoved Sixto's pistol back into his boot.
I hope you two get so sore you can't move for a week. Maybe next time you feel like a fight, you'll remember this. Now, we're taking these cattle south. If we have to cross some of Eli's land to get there, so be it.
One of Jessup's eyes was beginning to swell. He pushed to his feet, but had to lean on his horse for support. His other eye narrowed in resentment as he faced his men.
You all just sat there and did nothing. Every last one of you is fired.
Everybody was more scared of Paget than you two. Some people think he's crazy.
Tarpley retrieved his pistol. He tried twice to get back on his horse, but his legs were too wobbly. Huey moved to help.
Back away! I can do it myself!
His third try put him up into the saddle.
I still say we're taking these cattle west.
Tarpley looked toward his crew.
Stampede them, boys!
He ran his horse into the herd and fired his pistol into the air. The cattle shied away from him. The second shot put them into a run. Tarpley kept firing until the pistol was empty.
Damn it! I said stampede them!
Tarpley's men didn't move. The cattle were in full stampede.
Turn them! Get around them, damn it! Head them off!
Jessup spurred away in the wake of the fleeing herd. Huey lost track of other riders during the melee. Two C's hands and J-Bar punches alike went after the cattle in a hard run, trying to move in front of them. They shouted and slapped coiled ropes against their leather chaps, trying to get them moving in a circle. The run continued for the better part of a mile before the cowboys got the herd to milling.
Turn them south!
Go to hell to both of you.
Huey was closest to him.
Better see if we got anybody hurt. It'll be the wonder of the world if we didn't.
Huey immediately looked for Walter. He didn't see him. He trotted up to Grady Welch.
You seen anything of Walter?
He was over yonder way before I lost sight of him. I'm afraid his horse may have went down.
Huey saw two horses limping with no riders on them. One was Walter's. The saddle was turned under its belly. Huey's heart skipped.
Grady, help me find him.
The first man they found was Jessup's foreman, Mitch. He sat on the ground, one leg stretched crookedly in front of him. His face was pale in shock.
Grady, you better see what you can do for Mitch. I'll keep looking for Walter.
Grady dismounted.
Damned old rascal sure made a mess of it this time.
Huey found Walter a little farther on. The first sight of him made Huey's heart skip again. Walter lay with one hand pressed against his side. Blood oozed out between his fingers. Huey jumped to the ground, dropping the reins. He knelt beside his brother.
Where are you hurt?
Horse fell. Then a cow ran a horn into me. Bleeding like a stuck pig.
Huey ripped Walter's shirt open.
Oh, damn.
The wound still bled. Huey couldn't tell how deep it was. He took a handkerchief from his pocket, wadded it, and pushed it partway into the hole. Walter ground his teeth together.
If the puncture don't kill me, that handkerchief will.
It's all I got.
Walter's face was drained in shock, as Mitch's had been. Huey looked up to see several riders coming to help him.
Go get the wagon! We got two men hurt!
Juanito wheeled around and loped off toward Sixto's chuck wagon. Two cowboys got down to see if they could help. Huey recognized them as J-Bar hands. In this emergency, it didn't matter which ranch they represented. They were cowboys together. The feuding owners be damned. One of the men felt Walter's legs.
Don't seem to be broken. Looks like he got tromped on pretty good, though. Probably bruised all to hell. Maybe got some hoof cuts.
Mitch is down, too, over yonder.
One quickly rode off in Mitch's direction.
He ought not have stopped for the fist fight. Wish them two knotheads shot one another.
Paget rode up, his expression dark. He got down to examine Walter.
As far as I can tell, there ain't but two men bad hurt.
Two's more than enough.
He saw Sixto's wagon coming.
We'll have to throw a lot of stuff off to make room for Walter and Mitch.
Do it. If CC wants to bitch about it, let him. Right now, I don't give a damn.
Tarpley rode up just before the wagon. Blood and sweat and dirt were smeared across his face.
Them cattle are scattered all to hell, and you ain't done nothing about it.
And you can go to hell with them. Don't you see you got a man hurt? And there's another one over yonder.
That one's a J-Bar man.
Tarpley's tone indicated that Mitch was not his concern. Huey thought, some people learn awful slow. Sixto arrived with the wagon. He and Huey and Juanito began throwing off bedrolls, Dutch ovens, canned goods, and sacks to make room for the injured men.
Wait a minute, ain't that stuff mine?
Paget punched Tarpley's chest with the point of his finger.
If you ain't gonna help, then get out of the way. Else I'm liable to forget that you're an older man than I am and finish what Eli started.
Sixto and Juanito spread a couple of blanket rolls while Huey and Paget gently lifted Walter into the wagon.
Mitch is lying over yonder. We'll need to pick him up, too.
We get him.
What about them cattle?
Let him graze Jessup's grass for a while. I'll take the boys and gather them when I get damn good and ready. Only I ain't ready yet. Right now, it's a good thing I got no whiskey or I'd get fallen down drunk.
Walter was running a strong fever before the wagon reached Upton City. He seemed to drift in and out of consciousness. Mitch was awake, his teeth gritted so he wouldn't cry out in pain. Grady and a J-Bar cowboy had improvised crude splints out of mesquite limbs and had set the broken bone the best they could. Huey and Grady rode alongside the wagon. The J-Bar boys trailed behind it. Jessup had fired them, but later had harangued them to stay and see the cattle driven off his grass. They had all left him anyway. He sat on his horse, a man alone, hunched in misery from the beating he had taken. Tarpley persuaded his own crew to remain and help the South Texans gather the herd. The doctor decided that Walter was in the most immediate need of attention.
Your brother may appear unconscious, but he's likely to thrash around when I start working on that wound. You'd better hold on to him.
Grady joined Huey in holding Walter's shoulder and arms. Walter groaned and struggled as the doctor cleared dirt and shredded grass out of the hole in his side.
I'm afraid he has a couple of broken ribs, too. It's lucky they didn't punch a hole in his lung.
Walter sank into deep unconsciousness. The doctor closed and stitched the wound.
I'll bandage him in a little while. Right now, I'd best see to the other one. I'll have to reset that bone.
Huey had made a strong effort to keep his nerves under control while Walter was being treated. He almost lost his hold when Mitch cried out. Mitch's face glistened with cold sweat after the doctor straightened the leg, then applied splints and wrapped it.
You waddies need to learn that those cow brutes aren't house pets. They outweigh you by 4-1.
What about Walter? Is he going to be all right?
I have sewed him up. That's about all I can do for him at the moment. The worry now is blood poisoning. I need to watch him for several days. But as you can see, this house is hardly a hospital. It has little room.
We can take him over to Mrs. Pearson's boarding house.
That would be a splendid idea.
Grady placed a heavy hand on Huey's shoulder.
You stay here with him. I'll go talk to Mrs. Pearson.
She'll need to make a place for Mitch, too.
We may have to pay for this out of our own pockets. You know CC.
Who cares? Money's not good for nothing except to spend.
While I'm at it, I'll take our horses over to Brandon's stable and wagon yard.
Brandon? I thought the owner's name was Sandy.
It was, but he got caught on Alvin Laudermilk's place with a hot running iron. He ought to have known that a careful rancher like Alvin knows all his cows by name. You remember the calves we found with hair brands on them?
Yeah, we branded them over without letting CC and Eli get wise.
Turned out Sandy was the one who sleepered those calves. Alvin caught him red-handed. On account of him being a family man, the sheriff gave him a chance to quit the country. He left last Saturday for California.
Huey looked at his unconscious brother.
Just goes to show what too much ambition can do to a man. And all the time I suspicioned Alvin.
Grady had not been gone 20 minutes before Eve rushed into the doctor's house. Mrs. Pearson huffed along 50 feet behind her.
Where's Walter? How bad is he hurt?
The doctor can't say yet.
She accused him with her eyes.
Was this some of your doing, Huey Calloway?
He raised his hands as if to defend himself.
Oh, it was them two hard-headed old codgers, CC and Eli.
I want to see him.
Oh, he's in that room yonder asleep, or maybe unconscious. It's hard to tell the difference. But you'll be seeing a right smart of him for a while. If it's all right with Mrs. Pearson, we're fixing to take him over to her place.
All the accusation had not left her eyes.
I think it was your doing that he went on that drive.
She had him there. He didn't try to deny it.
I never figured on anything like this happening.
I gather that you don't figure ahead about much of anything.
No, ma'am, I reckon not.
Well, I'm going to take care of him even if you don't. Is that your wagon outside?
Well, I reckon it belongs to CC along with the cattle.
We'll haul him over there in it, him and Mitch. You go out and see that it's ready.
Huey's face warmed. He wasn't used to being ordered around by a woman, especially one he barely knew.
Oh, God help Walter.
Walter's fever gradually subsided. Eve hovered over him, fetching for him, holding his hands when she wasn't needed in the kitchen or dining room. Huey watched the two with deep misgivings. Paget showed up after a few days to inquire about Walter's progress. His red eyes and flushed face indicated he was suffering through a hangover.
I suppose you got the cows delivered?
Yep, but I thought I was going to have to whip CC myself all over again. It's a good thing he finally came to see things my way. I hated to hurt a skinny wart like him after Eli had already scarred him up so.
Well, their fight's been building for a long time, like a boil on the butt.
Well, maybe they got it out of their system.
I doubt it. When the fight was over, they were still the same two old hardheads they were before.
At least maybe they'll call a truce till the sores heal up.
I hope so. If it wasn't for you, they would have got somebody killed, more than likely. What do you figure on doing now that the drive's over?
Got a line on a job out in the Davis Mountains. They need a crew, so I'll take the South Texas boys with me. There's a good many Mexicans working out there. My bunch will fit right in.
Taking Juanito, too?
Sure. I promised Dodge. Anyway, the kid's got the makings of a top hand.
Paget walked to the door of Walter's room and looked in. Eve sat in a chair beside the bed holding Walter's hand.
Is that the girl Walter was talking about?
Yep. I don't know what I'm going to do about it.
The two men walked back to the parlor.
Why do anything? If Walter's found out what he wants, you ought to holler hooray and get out of the road.
It just ain't what I planned on. I thought me and Walter would see the country together. Travel when the mood struck us and light wherever we felt like.
Maybe that ain't what he planned on.
Well, I fixed it for Walter to go with me to South Texas so he'd get away from her a while. I hoped he'd have time to get over this foolishness about being in love. Looks like things turned out just backwards from what I figured on.
What you figured on? That's where you went wrong. Being brothers doesn't make you the same. You wanted to do the figuring for both of you. Walter's got a mind of his own. You were only thinking about what you wanted.
Well, it's just that we've always done everything together.
But Walter's old enough to be weaned. You best cut him loose, or you'll eventually be just two grouchy old dried-up bachelors like me and Dodge.
Huey glanced toward the door to Walter's room.
Well, looks like it's been done for me.
Mitch frustrated the doctor by getting up on a set of crutches much too soon. Eli Jessup came to the boarding house to visit him. His face was cut and bruised, one eye still swollen. He wasted no time on sympathy.
How long are you going to lay there? Work's falling behind out at the ranch.
You fired me, remember? You fired everybody.
Well, you'll be hired again when you can get back in the saddle. Till then, you can understand why I can't afford to pay you for doing nothing.
Yeah, I understand real well.
Huey bit his tongue and managed not to say anything. But he thought even CC has got more human kindness in him than that. After Jessup left, Mitch looked at Huey.
Paget told me about finding work out in the mountains. When I get up from here, I think I'll go see for myself.
Tarpley came the same day, though fortunately not at the same time as Jessup. He too was bruised and battered, but he offered Walter more understanding than Eli had shown to Mitch.
Well, don't you worry. You're still on the payroll, just same as if he was out there working. By the way, how long before you will be back out there working?
Doctor tells me I can go to the ranch in a few more days. Maybe a while before I can ride.
We heard you got those cows delivered to your new ranch, all right.
Yeah, well, I damn near had to whip Jerome Paget. He said he was in charge till we turned him loose, and I wrote him a check. Well, I didn't want to fight, so I finally let him have his way, just to be shed of him.
Paget would have made short work at Tarpley, but Huey humored CC.
It's a good thing y'all didn't tangle. You might have hurt him.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. I didn't want an old man like that on my conscience.
Tarpley turned back to Walter.
I'll need to put a camp man out at my new place to watch over them cows. It's got an adobe house. Would you be interested in the job?
I might be. Is the house fit to bring a woman to?
Tarpley blinked, confused.
But the roof might need a little work. Women can be fussy about such as Adam. But where are you going to find a woman?
I've already found her. Just ain't asked her yet.
Huey followed Tarpley out of the room and down the hall toward the front door. Tarpley shook his head.
A woman? The boy must still be running the fever.
I'm afraid he is. If Walter gets married, he'll need a raise.
I suppose a camp job does justify a little extra. Reckon he'd be satisfied with 30 a month?
I would. I'm only getting 6 bits a day.
Tarpley untied his horse from a post in front of the boarding house and mounted up.
I'll raise you someday when you're a cowboy. Right now, you're still just a cowhand.
Huey sat on a step and whittled a stick of wood into slivers while he watched Tarpley disappear on the road that led to the two C's.
Well, money ain't everything. Look at all the fun I'm having.
Huey Calloway's 6 Bits a Day is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Azelford, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Sheeran, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Tim Carlin, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, Ted Stoddard, Thomas Keegan, Catherine Aselford, Drew Kopas, Tim Getman, Danny Gavigan, Nanette Savard, Sherry Simpson, Christopher Graybill, James Konacek, Tom Simpson, Anastasia Wilson, Michael John Casey, Jeff Allen, Ken Jackson, Thomas Penny, Scott McCormick, Karen Novak, Amanda Thickpenny, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Azelford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. With original music by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Huey Calloway, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
There they go! After all! Let's tar and feather the bastard!
Oh, shit. Run! It don't look like our last night of independence is gonna be a peaceful one at all!
Preacher, fate has led you to us, sir. Is there any chance you'd consider accepting my proposition?
What do you mean about coming along with your wagon train to Santa Fe?
Indeed. I've heard it said that you probably know more about the country west of the Mississippi than any man alive. Wagons home! Martin, what's wrong, Preacher?
Something's been following us, and I am sick and tired of it. I'm gonna go find out what it is.
Somebody bring a light! I know you all want to know what happened. So do I. Let's wait for that light. Everybody just step back and give him some room now. Who is it?
His name was Hammond. Ben Hammond. My God, what could have done that to him?
I don't know. Some sort of animal.
Now, I bet you're wondering why I didn't just go ahead and kill you.
You know, I don't waste my time wondering about what loco snakes like you do or don't do.
Oh, I'm tired of having to worry about you people popping up to cause trouble for me. Now that I got y'all here, I'm gonna finish you off once and for all. We got you all lined up here like targets. So that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have some target practice. We're gonna shoot away little pieces of you and see how long we can keep you alive.
Son of a bitch!
What is it?
Cyclone! A big one!
My God, is it headed toward us?
It appears to be! It's hard to say, though, the way those things skip around.
What can we do?
If you're a praying man, I'd get busy at it. And if you ain't, this just might be a good time to start. Don't you dare miss the first Mountain Man 17, Preacher's Assault. Available now in graphic audio.
Tell me, Kip, if you've done bad things your whole life, but you die doing something good, do you think that makes up for all the bad?
No.
Me neither.
But it's better than nothing. Orcholum is merciful.
Wonder if you'll say that after they're done with your village.
Gavin Guile is the Prism, the most powerful man in the world. He is High Priest and Emperor, a man whose power, wit, and charm are all that preserves a tenuous peace. A peace that is slowly rotting from the inside out.
This is all that's left of what was once a great civilization. Statues of great men, broken by the pygmies who followed. Let me tell you something you already know. Something that all of you have believed, but no one dared to say. The wrong Guile won the Prism's war. They killed him because they were worried he would change everything. They feared him because Dazen Guile wanted to free us. Dazen knew that light cannot be changed.
As darkness slowly encroaches upon the land, Gavin receives a mysterious letter.
I'm dying, Gavin. It's time you meet your son, Kip. Lena.
As Gavin races to find his son, he learns of a new and dangerous threat to his empire. A man who calls himself King.
Your time is finished. Yours and the Chromarias. You're done! Light cannot be chained. Know this, Prism. We will take back what you've stolen. The horrors of your reign are almost at an end. And when it ends, I will be there. This I swear!
With the death of his empire looming, Gavin will be forced to wage a war on multiple fronts. But little does he know, his assassin may be looking right before his very eyes.
You're a stupid, stupid boy, Kip. But maybe a dull sword can go where a sharp one wouldn't be allowed. Don't you forget this. Don't listen to him, you hear me? He's a liar. You will not fail me in this, Kip. You learn, and then you kill him.
Yes, Mother?
Kip, if you ever loved me, avenge me. Swear it by your worthless soul, Kip.
I swear to avenge you, Mother, by my very soul.
Don't miss the beginning of the end in Brent Week's critically acclaimed new series, The Lightbringer Trilogy. Book 1, The Black Prism, Parts 1 through 3. Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents Vampire Earth.
We're boxed in. We've got 3 guns with ammunition still between us. And I've not seen a hint of friendly forces.
How many are coming after us?
More than enough. I'm gonna have to ask you to trust me. The Quislings love nothing better than taking prisoners.
You want to surrender?
Worse. I want all of you to surrender. We fight it out here and we'll just be dead. Giving up, you have a chance.
Every man counts here. Every man is important. The Grogs are another story. They'll run back to their buddies as soon as they see him. Sergeant Rivers, shoot the Grogs.
Sir, no! They're my men! Let me—
Shoot, Sergeant!
Rivers, you shoot again and I'll kill him, then you.
Valentine, have you got—
Men! General Martinez is under arrest for ordering the murder of soldiers of Southern Command. Uniform code says no soldier of Southern Command can be executed without trial and unanimous verdict of 3 officers.
Southern Command is gone. There is no uniform code anymore.
Then it's law of the jungle, Martinez. You're not a general. You're just some bastard who killed 2 of my friends. Last words? You all know I'm a cat. As of today, you're all cats too. We're going to pretend we're Quisling recruits. Lieutenant Frum has phoned into headquarters here the happy news that he's finally met, indeed overfilled, his recruitment quota. We've got faked documents requisitioning us food, new clothing, shoes, and weapons. You've all suffered because of shortages of those things. Quislings in the ruins have plenty. We're going to trick them out of them, get across the river, and rejoin Southern Command. Just keep your mouth shut. One loose tongue could do us all in.
The origins of your ghost commission. Our cousins in Louisiana do not care to cooperate with us in tracing you. Certain inconsistencies need to be explained.
Guilty. I'm not a colonel. I was a captain once, but I got busted back to the ranks. Got involved with the wrong man's daughter. I heard you needed men fast. Figured it would be a chance at a new start, fresh ground.
Then you have the spine to do what is necessary in our service.
Try me.
Lysane, a woman in your camp has just given birth. The squalling morsels are most delectable when new and slippery. Go to your camp and retrieve it at once. General, go with him and impress upon him our need.
Vampire Earth, Book 4, Valentine's Rising, Part 1.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for,
go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.